Set your course for the Huff
Takes Podcast.
Welcome back to Huff Takes. I'm Eric Geller.
I'm Grace Seegers.
And I'm Haley Bird-Wilt.
Now, in our day jobs, we write a lot about the United States Senate. And if you're following the news, you know that there's a lot going on with the United States Senate right now. But in this episode, we thought we would talk about another very controversial legislative body, and that is, of course, the Galactic Senate, because it doesn't make a ton of sense. There's a lot of things, if you think about how the Senate is structured, that are just very confusing or very nonsensical. And it's clear that this was not, shall we say, at the top of the list of things that George Lucas deeply fleshed out when he was creating the lore for the prequel era. A few examples, and I'm sure we'll get into this. Why do corporations get to have seats in the Senate? Are there any galaxy-wide laws that say how senators have to be elected, or does each delegation get to decide for themselves? By the way, what defines a delegation? Is it specific planets, specific sectors? If you go on Wikipedia, there's conflicting information. It doesn't make a ton of sense. And then we get into the whole issue of junior representatives and why they're there and exactly what they're supposed to do when the senator is around. I think that actually this is one of the most fun parts of the prequels to think about, because a lot of the kind of the fall of the Jedi and the rise of the dark side and Anakin Padme, a lot of that gets discussed to death. I think that the political situation that's in the backdrop of all of this is just super interesting, and also for our purposes super ridiculous and really fun to dig into. So you know, there's a lot of places we could go with this. We've got a ton of options in our notes, but Haley, where should we start when it comes to thinking about this institution and the effect that it has to be structured like this? Because it's not structured like the only sort of legislatures that we know in the real world. It's actually quite different from them.
Right. I believe it's unicameral.
Yes.
And I was telling y'all before we started, there's a 2015 Atlantic article by Matt Ford, who is Grace's coworker right now, about how he believes there's not enough separation of powers in the Galactic Empire. As you watch the prequel series, you sort of watch Palpatine get more and more power from the Senate. He makes the case that there's not enough federalism, that the planets don't really have enough power to address some of the issues that come up regarding like the trade blockade and that sort of situation. But while you were talking, Eric, I sort of thought that, you know, everything you're describing and just the makeup of the Galactic Senate seems like George Lucas just took our current politics, or at the time current politics, and just took it to like its most aggressive conclusion. Like, say you're not a fan of money in politics, in Star Wars, the banking association gets a seat in the Senate. You know, he takes the lobbyists and makes them members of the body. He takes places where people might be pressured to vote against a certain bill, and makes it so that bounty hunters are coming after them. He really gets into a lot of war politics and the momentum of never-ending war, which obviously was pretty relevant at the time and still is. So when you were saying that, I was like, you know, a lot of these characteristics we see, especially a legislative body that continually gives its power away to a sort of executive figure, definitely applies to our Congress even today.
I'm so glad that you brought that up, Haley, because in a lot of ways, especially episodes 2 and 3, you know, George Lucas is not a subtle guy, and this is kind of his post 9/11 response to the U.S. government, where it was at the time, to concepts of imperialism, of war powers, of delegation of authority. I mean, how is giving power to the Supreme Chancellor that much different than an AUMF? So I think that there's this kernel of some good ideas lodged inside the concept of a Galactic Senate. But the problem is he didn't do much thinking beyond like, hey, there's this legislative body and it gives away its authority and that's bad and war is bad and it's ironic because this is called Star Wars. So I think that you can see how George Lucas got to this point. But I think as we've discussed on this podcast before, he's a big ideas guy. He's not exactly like, let's follow through and add all the details guy. He delegates that to folks like Dave Filoni, for example. So I'm glad that you mentioned its relevance to modern politics of the time, because I think that connection is very apparent. But unfortunately, a side effect is that it makes absolutely no sense.
By the way, I just have to take a slight issue with what you said about him not being a details guy, because in the prequel era, there is a character named Lot Dodd. and to me, this reflects the best of George Lucas being a details man, because he very cleverly, or, you know, I guess someone working for him, came up with this guy whose name is Lot Dodd. And I'm assuming that most of our listeners who have found our podcast by following us and our journalism careers can tell that that is a combination of Trent Lott, Mississippi U.S. Senator, and Chris Dodd, Connecticut U.S. Senator, both former senators. So the man is reading the news and he's trying to cram as much of it into Star Wars as possible. You know, on a serious note, it is obviously the sort of defining allegory of the Star Wars prequels is the post 9/11 era, specifically the invasion of Iraq, the accumulation of more power, the Patriot Act, all that stuff. And it pops up, you know, we're talking here about the Senate, but I mean, we could have 100 other episodes about the broader sort of politics that's woven into the prequels. Anakin famously says, you know, during the duel on Mustafar, you know, if you're not with me, you're my enemy, which is sort of my understanding is that is a reference to the George Bush quote about, you know, if you're not with us, then you're against us, as a way of sort of demonstrating this notion of absolutism. When we talk here about the Senate, I think one of the, you know, there's the war and sort of the Iraq kind of, you know, metaphors that's happening there in terms of the distribution of power. I think another interesting area where we could go with this is the Senate and the Republic government is so broken that it doesn't really have the ability or the wherewithal to actually enforce its will far from the core. And that obviously is, you know, plays a huge role in the entire saga, because it kickstarts the story of Anakin Skywalker, who is living in slavery, even though, as Padme says, theoretically Tatooine is part of the Republic, it should be subject to anti-slavery laws. But it's not, right? I mean, there's no effort to actually implement that on the fringes, because much like in the real world, there's a limit to how much people in power care about people whose circumstances are different from theirs.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And to amend an earlier statement about George Lucas not being a details guy, I think that he can be a details guy, but only for really oddly specific things. And if he did indeed come up with Lot Dodd, which would be hilarious, then that would be an oddly specific thing. But I do think that the politics of the prequels is one of the best things about the prequels, and I think contributes to its sort of renaissance in recent years, where people are looking back at the prequels and going, hey, they weren't that bad, or yes, there were some really very bad elements, but there's some good stuff in here. And that kind of goes back to what I was saying before, where yeah, there's some cool ideas. But then you get to the Senate and questions like, okay, but if it's only unicameral, so just senators, then why are there junior representatives like Jar Jar? How do they get chosen? Like, are they supposed to represent the world's minority population? Like, what is their purpose here?
So, all right, so I did some looking into this, because my recollection was that they were basically there to be the representative of the minority population, as you said, Jar Jar representing the Gungans, and that is, my understanding is that is the purpose of junior representatives. It's not so much I guess they can be an understudy for the senator. We saw that Jar Jar did that. He filled in for her. So there's that element of it, sort of the vice president to the president. But it's also, I think, the primary goal is we want to have a voice in this body for the people who are not the dominant group, who are not likely to have the ability to elect somebody from their own group into this position, which is just an interesting thought to have because there are parallels to a degree in the real world, right, with racial demographics, right? But when you think about what might differ between species versus what differs between members of the human species, it's a different concept, right, of you know, why the Gungans would want somebody for themselves. I mean, they're sort of a traditional sort of bipedal humanoid species, but you can imagine on other planets where the minority species has a completely different experience of their planet, of life itself, because they're just physiologically very different. Maybe they're culturally very different. That could get into some really interesting areas where there might actually be a reason to have a dedicated person in the delegation for that group. It's not so much of a thing with the Gungans, although that from my recollection in canon, the humans and the Gungans on Naboo do have tension leading up to the Phantom Menace, so they're not totally in harmony, but they're similar enough that it's like, okay, they all kind of need the same things, basically. But the question then is, does that free up the senator to basically just be the representative of the dominant group? Which, if you think about it in the real world, we would recoil from the idea that, okay, this person only has to do what's best for people of this demographic group. That is kind of a provocative idea.
I mean, it's sort of sprinkled into the series, but I mean, obviously most of the series is about humans. But I read, I don't know, I guess when we started this podcast, the Thrawn book. And yeah. And a lot of that is about Thrawn is sort of discriminated against because he's a blue guy. And, you know, I didn't really understand or know before that was sort of defining characteristic of that period of Star Wars. I don't know if Jar Jar ever really reckons with how he's treated. I mean, obviously, there's been discussions about that after just sort of how he was portrayed, and I mean, Ahmed Best was just like bullied, and but I don't remember in the actual series Jar Jar sort of being jaded, just because that's his character. But do y'all remember if any of the Gungans were, I don't know, upset about unequal treatment? Or I just sort of recall like the main leader of them in The Phantom Menace being, I don't know, not thrilled with his planet's government.
He was, Boss Nass was definitely disdainful of the humans. There was a lot of like, we're going to, like when Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon come to him and say, you need to help, he's basically like, that's sort of an upstairs problem. Like, you know, that they're not going to come here. And ultimately what convinces him is that they do come there. Yes, there's a lot of sort of backstory there of the Gungans are basically just sort of marginalized on the planet. I don't know that they're persecuted per se, but they are sort of ignored, and they're not really brought into sort of government on the surface because they're just kind of in the swamps and underwater. So that's kind of, there's a tension there that I think is interesting, and it makes you wonder how the Senate delegations deal with that, because there might be circumstances where, you know, Padme wants to advocate for something that actually would necessarily be super great for the Gungans. I mean, Star Wars flattens a lot of this because we only see kind of the big debates, like going to war, right? That's kind of the only thing that we really see the Senate actually discuss. But you have to imagine there are a lot of other things where there's more nuance in terms of what people from different planets would support certain things.
It sounds like what we really need to do is build back Jar Jar.
Oh, boy. Grace, how long have you been sitting on that?
That is a terrible joke, Grace.
To be honest, I can't, as much as I wish I could claim credit for it, that actually came from my boyfriend when I told him what the subject of our conversation today would be. And he threw out the build back Jar Jar line at me. At first I was like, oh god, I hate that. And then I went, wait.
I will use that.
It grows on you, much like Jar Jar himself.
You know, this is somewhat related. I mentioned the piece from 2015 by Matt Ford, since we're talking about Naboo. He sort of makes the case clearly local governments are not strong enough in this galaxy. And I'm not sure if this is canonically why, but he mentions that Padme, quote, readily abandons her throne to serve in a legislative body thousands of light years away, sort of emphasizing how the local government was not strong, but there's sort of a benefit to be gained from representing them in the Galactic Senate. What do you make of that, Eric, having read, I don't know, far more Star Wars books than me? Do you think that his point there is true?
I mean, there's some nuance, right? Because if I want to sort of push my glasses up on the bridge of my nose and, you know, adopt a more nasally voice here to really just play into my true self, I could say that there's a tradition of queens only serving two terms, and so it's not necessarily that she gave up something that she was probably going to have again in order to go to this bigger stage. Technically, she did that, but there's a sense in which she was obeying an unspoken precedent to step down from being queen. That said, I think his point is valid, and it's not necessarily surprising in a situation like Star Wars, where there is a galactic government, that would be the place that you'd want to go, that an ambitious person or a person who was maybe even motivated by a sense of altruism, you know, would want to serve on that bigger stage. So yes, I think it's probably valid to say that the local governments have less authority, especially because if you think about, like, in Star Wars, you know, famously, there are planets that kind of only do one thing. There's, like, all desert planets. There's, like, all forest planets. You have to think about, from a sort of a trade perspective, a lot of planets can't get what they need locally. And so they have to trade. You have to have these trade alliances. You've got to have policies dictated at a regional level or maybe even a galactic level. If you need something from the other side of the galaxy, we have to have rules set up for how that works. There's a lot more interdependency than, you know, I mean, obviously, Earth, we're the only planet that we know of that has intelligent life, but we could probably continue to provide for ourselves even if we knew about other planets out there. We don't need to trade with them. Star Wars is different. So, yes, a local government that needs to engage with the broader galaxy would by necessity probably be less influential in the lives of its citizens because a lot of the policies are being decided in this broader forum. So I think that's probably valid. And it adds, of course, to the tragedy of the Senate, which is that this is where those decisions have to be made, and it's not an effective place to do it.
This kind of brings a question to my mind where it reminds me of stuffing pork into bills in Congress. So basically giving little goodies to specific members for their districts. And it makes me think, like, is that the case in the Galactic Senate where they'll be deciding a really big bill and then they're like, okay, and here we're going to give this little thing to Naboo? It raises interesting questions of if that's the case and the local governments are not nearly as effective as the Galactic Senate, then is the Senate really deigning to deal with every little local issue, or is it just kind of rolling those things up into one big omnibus, if you will?
That raises another question that I'm going to jump off of, which is just, like, the scale of the place. Like, how could you do a bill? Like, it's hard enough in the real world to get everything that you want into a bill. Now imagine having to give earmarks to every single delegation in the Galactic Senate. And my understanding is that, I have a citation here. According to the 2015 canon reference book, Ultimate Star Wars, there are 1,024 pods in the Galactic Senate. Now, it's not established that each pod is reserved for one delegation or how many delegations share each pod, but even if each pod is reserved for one and there are only 1,000-something delegations, which doesn't seem possible to me, but even if that's true, how do you possibly get anything done when, I mean, I guess you'd have to have coalitions, right?
So I suspect it would be similar to, I don't know, today's current congressional structure, which delegates so much power to party leaders. Do y'all remember? The Ford was sort of responding to this other sort of case that there needed to be stronger minority parties in the Galactic Senate. Did it seem? I'm thinking back to the Clone Wars. It didn't seem like there was a very organized structure. It seemed like people were loosely became coalitions when their interests aligned, but they weren't, going to the GOP conference meeting on Tuesday mornings after fly-in day and getting their talking points for the week. What do y'all think of that?
Yeah, it does make me think, what kind of a government is this in terms of party system? Is it like the U.S. with two parties, or more of a coalition-based system? Because, as you say, from what we see, purely looking at the Clone Wars TV show and the Star Wars movies, there's really not a description. We do see meetings in Padme's office of this kind of anti-war group, but it's not specified whether they're members of a party or if they're just sort of one coalition among many. And on the one hand, you know, that kind of offers an interesting experiment of what does governance look like without political parties. But it could also just make things very complicated. And for a body that already seems to have such a diffuse structure, you know, it makes you think, no wonder they centralize so much power in the hands of the chancellor, is because there's just no delegation of authority elsewhere.
You know, I'm glad that Eric mentioned the physical constraints of the building. I was following this. There's this report from AEI last week about the need to expand the House, which Congress stopped doing like 100 years ago or something. And one of the biggest arguments against it is, where's everyone going to sit? And like, we don't have enough office space.
We just need like floating pods in the House chamber.
Right. That is what we need. It would solve so many problems. But I would not be surprised, though, if in that galaxy, you're saying, you know, how could they possibly have enough for like a whole galaxy? I would not be surprised if, you know, later on, some of those same debates came up, where it's like, we just can't do enough deliberating. Like, it's just impossible to do this with so many people. Or like arguing for sort of consolidating representative senators into a single system instead of a planet, or that kind of thing. That's sort of how it went for our Congress. But they were like, we're out of room. We're out of room, and I don't want to keep up with this many people.
Well, and so much of what we're discussing and like the actual structure and the lore is dictated by the sort of the metaphorical purpose that the Senate is supposed to serve, right? The few things that we really know about the Senate in this era are they're corrupt and they just don't really want to do work. And so they're lazy and they just let the chancellor make decisions for them. And you could sort of imagine how we got to that point, right? If it's an unwieldy body by design, because there's so many of them, the sessions are probably unproductive. Transport can be difficult if you're coming from really far away, if you're coming from a pirate-infested neighborhood or whatever. Like, it might not be the most fun trip to make. It might not be worth your time when you get there. And so you can imagine a lot of them kind of not going to all the sessions. There may not be a mechanism to sort of force them to come and show up.
Voting
by proxy, letting their colleagues speak for them. I mean, there's a way in which you can imagine the kind of laziness and indolence that could seep into this body to the point where it's not even like, I affirmatively believe that the Supreme Chancellor will make the right decision, or I know what he's going to do and I support it. It's just like, he's an actor. He's a decider. Like, he will do something. And I would much rather just let him figure it all out. I was like elected and that's great. And I'm just going to get rich off of the profits and I'm skimming off of all these trade deals. Like, you can sort of construct that idea in your mind of what that looks like. Again, we don't really have a lot of that in canon, but that's how I imagine that situation plays out.
If y'all were constructing, and you can draw from our Congress too, if you were, I don't know, instituting greater checks and balances or making the incentives greater for senators to show up and do the job well, like, what institutional reforms would you make to the Galactic Senate? it's a very serious question.
I mean, first of all, I will say that I think like a durable and strong party system would actually encourage more participation, because it's sad to say this, but that notion of tribalism and of not wanting the other team to win would probably encourage more participation by people who were worried about the consequences of not participating. I mean, you know, maybe I don't have to go show up to this meeting, but I'm going to get in like a Signal group chat with all my friends from this caucus or this section of the party and say, well, some of us need to go because if we don't, they win. And you know, you would need the parties to actually have positions that they gravitate towards. I mean, you need them to actually stand for something. Otherwise, it doesn't really matter to me if the other team wins because they don't stand for something I hate. But if they stand for something I hate, all of a sudden, I actually want to participate now, if for no other reason than to prevent them from winning. So I think that might be one thing that would encourage participation. I don't know that it would have the best effect on governance per se, but it would at least get people more involved.
I would say another thing kind of along that line is having committee structure. You know, committees are important. And
but Grace, I don't have time to discuss it in a committee.
great, Han line. And it is an accurate line because committee work is super annoying. But when you are dealing with an entire galaxy, I think it's important to delegate some authority Yes.
Sorry, I agree. I've Googled this, and there's like 100 million Senate committees.
Yeah, but you know, that's all like one mention in one book somewhere.
Right,
It's not, there's no like, there's nothing durable about that list.
Clearly
like,
those committees really don't have much teeth, I would say.
So, as I was going to say...
Sorry.
As I was going to say, I know that committees exist in the Star Wars universe, so don't come breathing down my neck, nerds. Too late for that. But I meant more centralized committees that have clear, defined purposes and... importantly, a actual committee process, kind of like we have in our legislature with markups where legislation will go through the relevant committee, be voted on before going to the full chamber. So a robust committee presence, despite both of your mocking, I think would be important.
No, you're right. And that's something that definitely maps out to real life is... in Congress today, it's definitely been centralized to like party leaders, chamber leaders, instead of back in the day, you would have been like, oh, I really need to be on this committee so I can shape this legislation. And to some degree, that still applies today. But for most of the like big party efforts and like the big legislation that they're trying to get done, usually the party leaders are the ones in charge of that. It's not as much, I've worked 20 years to be the chairman of this committee, and now I get to have my say in this this important policy realm. And you sort of see that with people. I'm trying to think which, I think it was Devin Nunes. He was in line. I'm pretty sure he was in line to be chair of Ways and Means if Republicans take the House. And he was like, whatever, I'm going to go work for the Trump social media project or whatever, because that is somehow more appealing than having a big say in one of the most powerful committees in Congress, which is sort of an indictment of the House at this moment.
Well, yeah, and also, I mean, just getting rid of earmarks takes a lot of power away from the committee chairs, which is why I think in the Galactic Senate, if they actually wanted to get anything done and they wanted to sort of bring... I mean, I don't know. I was going to say, like, that would be a good way for them to entice people to get on board, is if they had an equivalent of earmarks. But the thing is, without a party structure, you don't have a great way of sort of doing a whip count, if you will, of like, well, these people are never going to vote with me. These people are always going to vote with me. And so it's really just the people in that third group where I need to figure out what I need to give them. It's really not clear to me that there's any structure in the Senate that would allow that kind of political calculation to happen. And when you imagine the alternative, which is, okay, I need to go down the list every single time. I need to go down the list of, like, again, let's just say 1,024 senators and figure out what each of them want and how they're going to vote on this. I just can't imagine that you could get anything done, which is why I think you do need a party system to have that kind of proxy support. You also, you know, the other thing that we haven't talked about yet is without a party system, without some way of grouping people, you don't have a sort of a shortcut in your mind for who's in charge, who controls things, right? In the real world, we could say it's a 50-50 Senate, you know, blah, blah, blah. In Star Wars, is there any way that you could characterize what ideology is in charge, like who has the upper hand at any given moment? I don't really think there is.
This brings me to my next question, which is, what is the role of the speaker? Because you would think that would kind of answer a lot of your questions, Eric. In our real world, the Speaker of the House, you know exactly who she is, what she's doing, what her role is. And that has a lot to do with what you're just talking about in terms of party power and centralizing power among party leaders. But without a party system or a clear delineation of Senate structure, it's unclear to me what the purpose of the speaker is besides just standing next to Palpatine and being like, order, order in the Senate.
He's got that big stick that he bangs on the ground and everybody pays attention. I'll just say on the speaker very briefly, another example of it, he's just window dressing. He's there to have that moment where he calls everybody to attention. I don't think it's ever explained anywhere. Well, I don't know. Maybe I don't want to say this, but I certainly can't think of a situation where it's explained what that person does.
It's like George Lucas heard the term Speaker of the House, and he's like, oh, that's someone who speaks. Yes, that is someone who speaks for the House and says order. Okay, I know what this is.
I was going to say, to sort of switch topics, and honestly, we could do a whole episode on this, but one of the things that makes this Congress held accountable is a very robust press corps. And if you don't follow the news much, which I assume most readers do, it's worth noting, congressional reporting, you get the press pass, you get like a security check and all that. But once you have that pass, or like a day pass or temporary, some kind of approval from the galleries, you can like wander the hallways when members of Congress are going to votes. You can ask them questions. You can catch them on the way to committee hearings. You can stake out the meetings they're doing. There's many, many opportunities for face-to-face. Hey, you, why didn't you turn in your stock disclosures? Like you can harass people. And I was reading the Wikipedia right now, but it seems like in some of the books, journalists have been mentioned, and there are journalists in the Star Wars universe, but it does not seem to be any sort of organized galactic Senate press corps. Like, you don't really see a press gallery above the chamber watching the proceedings or people catching Senator Palpatine as he's heading to votes. But if you had that, I not to speak too highly of our profession, but I think it would have been helpful to be able to sort of hold people accountable or ask him, hey, are you planning to turn this into a empire? Are you planning to be a dictator, sir? I think that would have, I don't know, been beneficial.
What a question, by the way. Like, are you planning to seize absolute power and, like, turn the government? And it's like, you know what? If you could just talk to my press secretary, she's right over there. just go ahead and send that in an email. We'll get you a statement on that.
That's how it would have gone, though.
It's like, okay. It's like, well, we're definitely not including you in the embargo. Like, when we declare an empire, like, everybody else gets to be in the embargo. But, like, you're going to have to just, like, write it up when, like, you see the tweets.
There would have been, like, a Scoopy newsletter, Twitter. You know, that's like, Scoop. Senator Sheev Palpatine is positioning Anakin Skywalker as his sort of envoy to the Jedi Council to keep up with what they're doing. Like there definitely would have been, I feel like, a greater public awareness of some of those goings-ons.
Scoop. Chancellor Palpatine has been horribly disfigured by the Jedi.
Oh, there definitely would have been, like, a state media.
Well, and then there's going to be people on Twitter who are like, I heard that it was actually his lightning and it was reflected back at him. And everybody's like, that's ridiculous. That would never happen.
Absolute
He's such a nice guy. He's such a nice guy. I think, you know, more seriously, like, again, the whole point of the Senate in the prequels is it doesn't work. It is disconnected from the people. There's really little accountability. And so you need to have, in order for that to be true, you need to have journalists in the background. They've got to be pushed away. They can't have that access that would allow them to, if nothing else, get these people on the, you know, the HoloNet news saying really embarrassing things like, I don't care that this is a horribly corrupt thing that I'm doing. Like, you need that kind of accountability. And when you don't have it, this is what you get. And so, yeah, I think we don't see a ton of, you know, in Star Wars, the journalism that we see is typically like either some kind of investigation on like a war-torn planet where they're doing like a video, like a stand-up basically in front of some like bombing site, or it's just straight up like just aggregation of like the official content. Like it's just like them pointing the camera at somebody who's speaking. We don't see a lot of confrontation of power, direct confrontation of power. And I think, again, the reason for that is taking that away helps explain why things are the way they are in this at this point in Star Wars.
Yeah, usually in Star Wars, and this goes for both the Republic era and the Empire, when we see anything about any sort of news reports, it's typically propaganda. And if there's any kind of underground radio or HoloNet sort of casting, that is done by the Resistance itself. There's no real journalism that we see that is independent of the state, which is in and of itself another example of why the Republic is corrupt and crumbling.
And I will say, by the way, just briefly, before we move off of like the whole like the party system and all that, if people are listening to this and they are interested in imagining what Star Wars could look like with a stronger party system, there's a great novel set in the New Republic era called Bloodline, which is focused on Leia as a senator in the New Republic, and it actually has two pretty strong parties that are basically have coalesced around the idea of, do we want to have a military or not? Are we going to take an aggressive stance against the First Order threat, or sort of the rumblings of the Imperial Remnant, because they don't know it's the First Order at that point, or are we not? Are we going to try to avoid the mistakes of the Empire as this militarized entity and just kind of lean back and trust that everything will work out? And you can sort of tell how I feel about that question. But it's a great book because it actually gets into, in a Star Wars-y way, what happens when you have those parties. You know, Leia has this really interesting relationship with this other senator, and it's dictated by and sort of constrained by the fact that they're in different parties. And it's a really great book, so I highly recommend it. You know, I think as we think about the role of the Senate in Star Wars, we can't get away from the fact that, again, it is supposed to be broken, because that's the activating event for everything else. That is what pushes everybody else into place. But if we could just step back for a minute here, do you think was that the only way to show a galactic government in this era in order to move the other pieces into place? I mean, do you give George Lucas a pass basically for how shallow some of this is because it needed to be this caricature of corruption in order for the rest of the story to work? Or are you actually sort of disappointed that they didn't try to flesh some of this out a little bit more, even knowing where things had to go?
You know, I feel like there's different models for it. And it's not like any of them are more subtle. The first one that comes to mind for me is, it could have been, I mean, there might have been some institutional decay and some problems that had been building up over the years. But when you have like an enigmatic leader come to the spotlight with hordes of followers, like it could have been something like that instead of sort of the behind the scenes maneuvering that Palpatine did. I don't think that would have been better per se. I think it would have been a little messier, but it would have ended with maybe the same result, and you could have had, you know, Anakin in the same way as when he is in the prequels, is sort of taken with Palpatine's, I don't know, leadership style, the sort of things that he tells him about, and it just would have been on, I guess, a larger scale. I'm trying to think of like what other models of authoritarianism. I mean, you have sort of like the Soviet Union populist uprising, which is sort of different. I don't know what that would have looked like on a galactic scale, though.
I think I can understand how and why, like I said, George Lucas came to the conclusion about the Senate and how it functions. And I think for the purpose of a movie trilogy, it makes sense not to go too deep into the weeds about it. But as a fan of good governance, just in theory, I would have appreciated more clarity in subsequent media like the Clone Wars TV show, like books. I think that there's a way that they could have had their cake and eaten it too in terms of keeping the story the same in the movies, but also just adding a bit more depth than they did. What you mentioned, Haley, about a populist uprising, I think that would be a really interesting thing, for an interesting path for the story to take. And I think that there are elements of that in how quickly we see everyone coalesce around Chancellor Palpatine when he declares himself Emperor Palpatine. But I also agree that it would be really difficult to convey that on a galactic scale. And we do kind of see some of that in the Clone Wars TV show, interestingly, with the Separatists. But it's hard to convey. So what I would have liked to see would have just been more depth in
the... I think, just on that note, I think that, like, the factor that makes that difficult is if it's on such scale, everyone has different issues they're dealing with. Like, oh, that's mining union. Yes. Right. It's planet-wide. It's hard to find an issue where, you know, whole systems are... a whole galaxy is rising up about some specific thing that they're enraged about. Like, I feel like just the nature of it makes that sort of difficult to pull off.
Yeah, I mean, you took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, there is no realistic way to do sort of a galactic scale, like class uprising, you know, class solidarity, because every planet, every system has its own dynamics. Different people have different privileges and different frustrations. And I mean, the best you can do is say, like, people who have less money and power are mad about that, you know, rightly so, and they're mad at the corruption of the people who have all the money and power. But in a practical sense, the people in one system who feel that way might have strong disagreements with the people in another system who feel the same way about their own corrupt rich people, right? There's no guarantee that you can have that linkage across the people in that class level, because they might be so different on so many other grounds. You know, our model for thinking about all of this is the Earth nation state, where even in a place as big as the Soviet Union, I mean, that's, you know, just basically a continent-wide country, and yet there is enough solidarity, there's enough shared experience that you can have the Russian Revolution. I don't think that can really happen in a realistic way in Star Wars. And so, you know, I think, Grace, you were the one who sort of connected the idea of a populist uprising to the support for Palpatine after the supposed Jedi coup. And it's interesting because I think that kind of support is more of a sort of paranoid security state, you know, trust in the government to keep me safe type of thing, as opposed to an ideological support against the Jedi. Although we know that different people have their own frustrations with the Jedi, and Palpatine is certainly trying to play on that. I would distinguish that kind of flocking to Palpatine from the sort of flocking to, you know, the Bolsheviks in the Russian Revolution.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I don't think that there is really a way to do it in that manner. I just think it would be cool if they did figure out a way, kind of Dune-esque, if you will, of populist movement rising up around a charismatic leader. But that's a different story. So
we should discuss Dune.
I guess I have to watch Dune.
Oh, Eric, you haven't seen it?
No.
Grace saw it. Grace saw it, and then she read the book, and she enjoyed it.
I enjoyed the movie so much that I read the book, and then I enjoyed the book. So, yeah.
It's great.
All right, I'll watch it.
Good. Good decision. You know, it inspired much of Star Wars.
I've heard that. That I have heard.
You can really tell, too.
Yeah, I know that when I felt this way, too, about, like, when I watched Hidden Fortress. It's just like, you know, you watch it and it's like, oh, like, okay, so that's where Star Wars came from. Which is fun. You know, it can be fun. So I'm sure I'll enjoy it. And yeah, that would be an interesting conversation. Final thoughts on the Galactic Senate and what we do or don't like about it, and the implications for Star Wars.
You sort of you have this in our show notes here, but it seems like their security wasn't that great. I'm thinking I'm thinking of the what's his name, the Hutt, Zero the Hutt storyline, which is the best storyline in all of Clone Wars.
Incredible.
Where doesn't he take like a bunch of senators hostage?
Oh,
he
yeah, sure well, does. So I think the story plays out where Cad Bane and other bounty hunters take them hostage and basically trade the senators for Zero the Hutt. But it's this weird thing where, again, and I have this moment where I'm watching this episode, and from a just pure, like, security standpoint, I'm like, that is the dumbest thing. Like, the bounty hunters, they get into the Senate building, right? And they go to the room where all the guards are, and the guards are changing shifts, and they just, like, throw a thermal detonator into the room.
No!
And, like, I guess we're led to believe that those were the only guards in the entire Galactic Senate chamber. Like, I don't know, it just doesn't... It was weird to me. Like, if that's true, that's just horrible mismanagement. But it's also just, like, I have a hard time believing that there were only, like, 30 guards, like, Senate guards. That being said, yes, they are very much the red shirts of especially the Clone Wars series.
I think they're actually literally in red armor. Like, their armor is literally accented with red.
Just as such a defining characteristic of, like, Washington, D.C. In that era was security theater. And, I mean, it's, to an extent, much of that is still in place today. How effective it is, questionable in the aftermath of January 6th. But, it's sort of, if that's the era that Lucas was... sort of basing this on, it's sort of surprising, they don't have to walk through security checkpoints.
It is interesting, actually, when you think about the layout of sort of the political sort of section of Coruscant, and you just look at, like, the buildings and the space around the buildings, there's none of that. There's no, like, Jersey barriers. There's none of those, like, I don't know what the term is, but those circular barriers that, like, they can, like, raise up out of the ground to prevent, like cars from going through. Like, there's nothing, there's none of that infrastructure. We don't really see metal detector checkpoints, although I don't necessarily know that they ever really linger on a place where we would see them. But yeah, there's none of that kind of massive security buildup that you would expect. First of all, you would expect just from a hyper advanced society that they would find more ways to add that in. And then second, you would expect it during the Clone Wars, they would add even more of it, but it actually looks like a fairly accessible location.
Maybe they were like, hey, we've got some magic space wizards, and if you've got some problems, they'll sense that you're on the way.
I mean, honestly, it seems like a lot of their problems, galaxy-wide, they just handled by being like, yeah, we'll throw some magic space wizards at that problem. Everything will go okay. So...
I mean, yeah, definitely a source of many of their problems is just, assuming that the magic police monks can, just wave their hands and solve everything, because I guess sometimes they can.
The only other thing I want to add to this conversation is that the line that Padme says in episode 3, when Palpatine is given his whole big speech about how the Jedi attempted a coup, and everyone's cheering. And then Padme says, so this is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause. And it's like, that's Academy Award winning Natalie Portman right there. That is some good stuff. And I love that line. And for all of the Senate's faults and all of the prequels' faults, that line goes so hard. And I adore it.
It's actually just a genuinely fantastic line. Like, it's George Lucas will have some of those lines in the prequels, which is not known for their good dialogue. It's harder to spot them in the originals because they're all great lines. But, like, sometimes you just get a great line in the prequels, and it's like, damn, that really went hard. Like, my favorite line would probably either be that one or on Geonosis when Mace Windu shows up with all the Jedi and he's like, this party's over. I'm just like, yes, that's exactly who, like, Samuel L. Jackson, Jedi Master, would be. Like, that is perfect.
Y'all, this is totally unrelated, but we've been rewatching the Spider-Man movies, and I just had forgotten how good the dialogue is. Like, Willem Dafoe is, literally, he goes, time to die! And it's like, that's perfect writing.
I mean, you want them to ham it up a little bit. Like,
yeah, you want the camp.
Yeah, And you know, I think that the Mace Windu line that I referenced was kind of in that category. The Padme line, I would argue, not campy, very much like straightforward, serious, like and well acted and like, you know, well written. So props to George Lucas and Natalie Portman for that one.
Agree.
Okay, well, thank you all for listening to our episode on the Galactic Senate. If you want to share your thoughts with us about this episode, suggest topics for future episodes, please do. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us, hothtakes@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter. We're at hothtakes. I'm at Eric Geller on Twitter. Grace is at Grace_Seegers, and Haley is at Burdenator. Haley made our wonderful logo and banner art, and I edited the show and put together our music. Although, again, for legal purposes, we do have to point out that all the Star Wars themes and sound effects that you hear on the show are the intellectual property of Lucasfilm. If you want to listen to past episodes, you can find an archive on our website, hothtakes.wordpress.com. And if you enjoy the show, please share it with a friend or family member. You can find Hoth Takes on all the major podcasting platforms, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. We will see you next time. May the Force be with you.